Good evening everyone and welcome to this Community and Wellbeing Scrutiny meeting. And I would like to give a special welcome to our guests from Viola, Graham Smith and John, let me get the Higgins, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And also a gentleman that I don't know whether you've met, which is Craig Royal from... There's a new gentleman on board that's taking the waste from over from Lee, I understand, in a few weeks' time. Is that correct? So, but everybody else, I think everybody else is fair with everybody. So, welcome everyone. And, right, can I ask you all please to turn your mobile phones off or put them on silent, please? Okay. Right, so what I'm going to do actually now is rehash the agenda and we're going to set the Viola presentation first, but we'll go through the preliminaries first, shall we, Jackie? Yeah, right, the 26th of June 2024, as everybody say, that's a true record, and can I sign them as a true record, please? Any objections? What have I done with them? Thank you. Have we any apologies, please? Second item, apologies.
So, Councillor Leeson, Councillor D. McNaughton, who's substituted by Councillor A. McNaughton.
Thank you.
And Councillor Fordham, Cabinet Member.
Thank you very much. Any public questions? No public questions?
No?
No councillor questions?
No.
No. Members' items? No.
And we'll come back to yours and we'll do the Veolia.
Yeah, we'll do that after that, yeah. Okay. Right, so we'll take the Veolia and thank you very much, gentlemen, for giving your time up and coming and giving the presentation. So if you'd like, over to you then, Graham. Thank you. It doesn't seem 2 minutes since last time.
I know, yeah. Hopefully the presentation will run this time.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're just going to quickly run through the presentation of the annual report for 23-24. So a few of the key figures. We've seen a 21% fall in reported miscollections. 90% of miscollections resolved within an SLA, which is up 7% from 22 and 23. 14.1% increase in collected green waste tonnages, and a success rate on first-time collections at 99.99%, which I think is again up from last year. Number of collections per annum, 4.11 million. And missed collections within those collections are 1,674. And then, as you'll see there, we have KPIs that we have to meet. Each month we've actually breached the banding of the KPIs. So over the periods, you'll see there's different bands in there. Each month, each quarter, we're measured against these. We haven't yet reached the bandings, but they are quite a stringent banding that was probably not quite it's comparing the old contract to this contract, and there's different measures in place which have resulted in that. Again, there's on figures on there, 4.1 million collections with only 1,674 missed collections, and there's the success rate again. Missed assisted collections per year, we saw a slight increase this year from 194 up to 206, which is an increase of 6.19%. So for those that are not aware, assisted collections are where residents can literally apply or ask to have a collection from their doorstep rather than from the curbside, normally because they're elderly or they have medical conditions, which means they can't present their bin. So the crews will actually go up to the drives, collect the bins, empty the bins, and then take them back again. So one of some of the reasons that we wanted to go through why we get missed collections. So there's a few various things there. Roadworks, as you can experience at the minute, we've got extensive roadworks everywhere. Sometimes we'll turn up in a road and we just literally can't get down. Most of the time they'll try and get another way, an alternative way, or they'll end up going back the next day. Even though we sometimes have advance notice of roadworks, you never know how they're actually going to set the roadworks out until the day when they get there and set them out. But that's one of the reasons. New build estates, again, we'll obviously be aware of the amount of new builds that we've got on there. Because the delivery of bins is not done by us, it's done by Street Scene, we're not completely aware of where all the bins are until we get onto site. And they normally start filling houses up from the far end of the building site, so we have to make our way through all the building site to then find a bin. So it's normally when we get to the site and then we find that there's a bin somewhere we can empty it. So on occasions, one round the corner will have been occupied, and we're not aware of that until we actually get there. Inconsiderately parked vehicles blocking access. Sometimes whole streets can be blocked off. At that point, the crews will record that on their echo device in the cab, and then they'll return later on in the day. The only ones that we don't tend to return to are ones that are blocked by police activity, which there's been very few this year anyway. And then adverse weather conditions. I think I'd say we've been quite lucky this year with adverse weather conditions. There's been very few. Some years you have quite a few, and sometimes we escape. So that's good. Collected weights for all years. The biggest one that we see in there is an increase in the garden waste. But we've seen an overall increase in the collected weights by 3%. It's not back up to the years of 2021. We've obviously seen a decline in the weights over the last couple of years, but it seems to be increasing again now. Probably getting back to a bit more normality. And then the health and safety stats and figures, which are a bit difficult to see on there. Obviously, there's the calendar month on the left-hand side, and then we've got incidents in the first column, accidents in the second column, riddles in the third column, and then near misses or close calls, as we call them. In the next slide, I'll go through some examples of the close calls, because one of the questions we quite often get asked is what constitutes a near miss or a close call. So there are some examples of those. We have seen an increase this year, or in this reporting year, of accidents. That's because we're trying to promote a culture within the depot, making sure everything's being reported. So there's a lot of accidents that have been reported, but they're a lot more minor ones. They don't result in lost time injuries or riddles or anything like that, but they will be things that probably the employees carry on working, but we're trying to push them to report things so we get a true picture of the actual events that are going on in the depot and out while they're collecting as well. So some examples of the events that we've got reporting there. So near misses and close calls. It's defined by the HSE as an event not causing harm but has the potential to cause injury or ill health. So for example, the damage being reported by a crew as having the potential to cause an accident, or there might be a tree root sticking up, there might be hedges, various other things like that the crews can report in advance. We can hopefully try and get those resolved before there's any injury that occurs. Incidents, an unplanned event that does not result in injury but does cause damage to property or has enough significant risk to merit recording. These can be things like we've had vans turning up on site to drive around site to look to see if there's any batteries or anything, scrap metal they can steal from site. Or it could be motor accidents that we've had, or it could be fires as well. We've had a number of fires in vehicles. Those are recorded as incidents as well. Accidents separately identify unintended incident which causes physical injury. So many of those that we've had are slips, trips and falls. Tends to be more so in winter months when it's the weather's bad, you've got wet weather, ice around. We've seen then trips and falls. We see quite a few on new estates as well, where you haven't quite got the roads that are finished off, or we've got newly freshly laid turf and that hides a multitude of sins. Riddles is an event reported to Board Health and Safety Executive under the reporting of injuries, diseases and dangerous occurrences regulations. So we did have one this year, in this reporting year, which was in a loader who pulled two bins at the same time. They were heavy bins, and as he pulled the bins down the curb, he pulled his calf muscle, and he was off for more than 7 days. So although it wasn't a serious one, it was the length of time that he was away from work that we had to report it under. but that was reported to the HSE. So the reason we try and get as many near misses as possible, I'm just showing you that the Heidrick pyramid, which the theory is that if you, the number of near misses or close calls that you get, you decrease the amount of serious accidents that you have. So if the guys are reporting near misses and close calls to us, hopefully we can prevent the things from happening in the first place, so we can resolve those issues, and then preventing minor accidents and even more serious accidents. So it gives you a reason, it gives an explanation why we try and get as many near misses. I don't know where sometimes when you see lots of reports of near misses, people kind of think there's lots of things that are wrong, but we actively try and seek out these near misses from the workforce so we can try and fix them before they result in accidents. Some of the highlights from the reporting year, towards the end of the year, February it was, we rolled out StreetKind. This was a campaign that we've rolled out at a number of Veolia sites, where we try and promote on the vehicles and on the backs of the employees' PPE, that trying to be mindful of the employees when they're working. It's the sort of things where we're looking at cars driving down pavements, different things like that, crews being abused while they're working, which thankfully is not excessive, but there are occasions where crews are abused, but it's mainly verbal, and they don't tend to report it. So what we wanted to try and do is try and get them to report the actual things that happen, because they kind of just accepted that it's part of their normal job, their day, and it quite clearly isn't. So we saw an increase of these reports towards the end of January, February, March. The majority of the calls that we were, or reports we were getting, was actually about cars on pavements. So this is where, when vehicles are stuck behind a truck, the loaders are emptying bins, and then the cars and vans or anything will literally go up on the pavement side, and they'll go down the inside of the vehicle. So it's our loaders are at risk, but also any members of the public are at risk. If there's someone walking down the pavement, they're at risk as well. And there has been some prosecutions leading on from this, because part of this, we were involved with the Crime Commissioner as well. He attended on the day as well. But we report anything like that, because all the vehicles have got CCTV cameras on them, so they record 360 all around the vehicles. So we can use that footage then to provide that to the police. All we need to do is provide the police with the vehicle registration, because it doesn't always get picked up on the camera. So we always ask the crews to report the vehicle registration. We then match that up with the footage, and then we send it to the police. The police tend to have two kind of opportunities or avenues to go with it. They review the footage, and then if they feel that it's worthy of them just writing to the car driver, they note the registration, they put that on their file, and they'll write to the resident or the car driver, and they'll go out to them. Their other option is, if they see it where they see it's more of an actual active, they've decided to drive on that, they've made a decision, it's not like they've sort of taken that shortcut, they've decided to do that, then they will prosecute. And we have had drivers that have been sent to on courses and have been received fines or points from that. So it's worked quite well in terms of the StreetKind. We're getting the guys to report things. We have seen an increase in reporting. I think the near misses and close calls went up about 150% after we did that, because we've done it with several things. We did the initial rollout, and then we've backed it up with having our risk and assurance teams coming into the depot, going out with the crews, and also supervisors and managers from other depots coming out and making them aware of how important it is that they make these reports. So we did see quite an increase in those reports. And then a look at some of the highlights we do every year. We like to sort of celebrate the good things that we do in the community. Veolia itself, and at Stafford especially, we do have a culture where we are part of the community, we're no part of the community, and we like to get involved as much as we can. We have quite a few regular events now. So we've got the images on the left-hand side of the Hearts and Hands donations that we make. So that was Christmas time. We make donations to Hearts and Hands and to Rising Brook Church. All in all, I think they raised over £4,000 on the last Christmas. And they will start, the workforce now will start nagging us to get onto this now, start promoting it to them to get them all to do it. It is fantastic, to be fair. They'll then speak to the food banks and the places that they're going to take the items to, finding out what they need. It's not just food. They will take Christmas presents for children. They will take hats, scarves, reading books, colouring books, anything that they, you know, that Hearts and Hands or the Rise Above Church sort of say, these are the sort of things we need. Can be deodorants and all sorts. They literally, they go to town now and do whatever's needed. Christmas, obviously, after Christmas is another busy time. We start doing the Catherine House Christmas tree collections. So this was actually some footage, and there's also we were on Radio Stoke as well. We covered it when we were collecting the Christmas trees. So the website is run by Catherine House. Residents in the collection areas can contact the website. They can make a donation of any value, and then the following 2 weeks after Christmas, we make all the collections of the Christmas trees. So I think this year we're on about 680 odd trees that we collected and raised £13,000 for Catherine House. So it's quite a good, you know, a significant amount, and it's something the crews enjoy doing as well. It's good for us, and it's good for the crews. It's at a time of year where we've got the time to do that on that work, so it they enjoy doing it. And then on the right-hand side, we've got the Easter egg collections. So again, if anyone comes into my office at that time of year, it's just full of Easter eggs because it's the coolest place in the depot, so not melting. But they go to a child of mine, they go to Hearts and Hands again. And I think they also take them to Rising Brook again. So it's very well received. And then on the left-hand side, again, I think is the food bank collections at Christmas. I think Wayne's in the background, who is he's chief in charge of badgering everyone to donate or bring things in. So he's the one that will start moaning at me in the next couple of days, I'm sure. So our annual service improvement plan, we're looking at anti-contamination drive. One of the things that we're including in this going forward this year is a dangerous waste campaign and awareness about it. That is looking at small electronics, things like vapes, Wii items that end up in the waste, lithium batteries as well. We find it worse in recycling vehicles. Once they get into the vehicle and they're swept up into the vehicle, if the actual batteries are broken, the cases, they then can start a fire within the vehicle. So we've had three or four this year so far of vehicle fires. Obviously, it's in the vehicle with the recycling. It's next to the side with the paper on it. It can go up quite quickly. The ones we've had this year, fortunately, have resulted in an outburst of flames and some smoke. We've managed to bring the vehicle back to the depot. We tip it off in the depot and then douse it in water and leave it on one side. We keep checking on it throughout the day. But fortunately, we've not had any serious incidences for this year or last year. We're continuing the additional bins project and expanding that, where we've got certain areas where we have a number of additional bins, which are a blot on the landscape in back alleys and places like that. So we're working with residents to identify where these are. And then we'll go out and remove those. We're supporting the council with the changes in law. Obviously, there's a lot of changes going on at the moment, and we're monitoring that and working closely with the council on those. We're always looking at further sustainability improvements at Tollgate. We have some gardens on site at the depot, which we use as a bit of a memorial garden. And a couple of the guys in the workforce look after those. They are getting quite nice now. They're really working hard on that. They've started using rainwater for watering all the flowers and everything like that. And we are looking to see if we can do something by using the rainwater to then use it on the vehicle wash. It just depends on the pressure that we can get and such. But we can put IBCs, internal bunded containers, on top of a container. The rainwater will flow those up, which will then fill into the wash. So that is something we're looking at doing, hopefully, this year. An assisted collection review. So We've literally just done an assisted collection review where we have onboard devices which tells the crews where the assisted collections are. We've cleansed those, so we've taken any older ones off that people have not reapplied for, and then made sure that that's clear. We are then going to sort of, every time we get any reports from crews, we'll report that back to the council. We can contact the residency if it's still required or if it's not required. Some of them, if a resident moves on, then it can stay on that property because it doesn't get taken off. So it can be that the bin starts being presented. So at that point, we can then start taking it off. But in that way. And a focus on miscollections again. This year so far, we have seen an improvement in miscollections. That's moved now to a weekly and a fortnightly and then monthly focus where we review our KPIs. And then obviously on a regular basis within the council meetings, we review those as well. And that is the end of the presentation. I don't think we've got any questions.
I think we probably will have. Thank you, Graham. Sure. Can I say thank you very much for a very comprehensive report and summary on that. It's very interesting. You've got a lot going on, but I'm just thinking, I'm talking to the committee now, from page 9 to 30 and 39, I hope you've all read that and had a look, and if there's any queries or any questions in that, or any questions that Graham's given his presentation, if there's anything, questions you want to ask. I mean, one question I'd like to ask, actually, is there anything we can do as a committee to help you, with your work that you're doing?
One of the things we're introducing this year or in the start of next year is a sustainability fund. So we are looking for projects to fund. So it might be that there's something that you're aware of that you can raise with us. We'll be putting out information about how people can apply for part of the funding. So that might be something that...
What sort of fund are you talking about?
It's kind of having a sustainability edge to it. So anything that includes sustainability, it could be litter picking, it could be all sorts of things.
Yeah.
The values at the minute have not been confirmed because it depends on budgets at the moment. But
there
is going to be a fund set up there.
That's really interesting. Has anybody else? Yes, Councillor Phillips.
Can I just ask the collection weights? So I've noticed that obviously we've got an increase this year in waste that's been collected. I know that there's been an increase in the garden waste, but everything else seems to have decreased. Is there any reason why you think that might be? Why our recycling in general, other than the garden waste, seems to be less?
It tends to go up and down. We review it regularly each month. Sometimes we hit periods that are higher and some are lower, and I don't think we can actually put an actual finger on why those go up or down, to be fair.
Councillor Barron.
Thank you very much for that. I know parking is a great problem and it must be very difficult for you, but this is a general thing, isn't it, parking on pavements? And it really does need addressing for blind people, etc. And I'm glad the police are doing something about it, at least. And I was pleased to see that the assisted bin collection is still going ahead. I've got a few residents and I've had no complaints from them. When you said they have to reapply, that's only if they change household, the circumstances change. Once you had an assisted collection, it's on forever to you.
It used to be that you'd normally get a letter sent out annually, which you would complete the form and send the form back in, so that would constantly review. But at the minute now, as we've changed it to reduce that burden of sending out letters each time, it stays on at the moment until something changes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And your charity events, can anybody apply to you for charity funding, or do you just have your own charities that you deal with?
No, we're open to others. We have used others in the past, but we've kind of ended up going the same ones. We're open to other charities as well. We have helped other charities as well.
Worthy causes, but I just wondered how you arrived.
They're historical, basically. They're ones that we've been helping probably for nearly 10 years, some of these, and we've got that relationship built up, but we're always looking for something different. That's fine, no problem at all.
Councillor Thornley?
Yeah, on the waste bin collections, do you monitor houses that don't put their bin out? Like when you come up a street on its bin collection day, it's blatantly obvious a house hasn't put their bin out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you monitor that and take into account a property that's a regular occurrence of this?
Yeah. Yeah.
So and then get in touch with that property?
Yeah. We don't get in touch with them, but what we do, we record it. We have an in-cab technology, so we have an echo device, which is like a handheld device. As the crews go down the road, every property that they need to collect from is on that device, and they will basically swipe one way if it's out and one way if it's not out. So we can actually, and we present each month the number of bins that have not presented. At the moment, we don't contact those people, and there's no plan going forward to do that, but they are recorded, and we do have a record of those ones, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right,
thank you. Councillor Hobbs?
I mean, it's obviously a really good, as you say, comprehensive report, and I think you seem to be doing a great job. I mean, I'm one of your customers, and we have no complaints at all.
No.
But what I was wondering, because this is a report of what is going on within the company, do you have any sort of peer reviews? Anybody from outside coming in? And
from Veolia?
Well, outside of Veolia, because obviously you're reporting on yourselves, aren't you?
No, we don't report, we don't have any peer visits from outside of Veolia. Within Veolia we do, where we make comparisons against other collection contracts. We have various visits from, we swap with other managers, so we'll go and look at their site. We try and share good practice from site to site. In the year that we're talking about, we did have all of our health and safety representatives from around the country that came for one day, we had a stand down day, and they went out with the crews. Mm-hmm. We also had their several general managers, and also the managing director from Municipal came and visited for the day, and he went out and spoke to the crews to get some more information. And so we do it within Veolia. Mm-hmm. We always, on a monthly basis, compare collection figures and different things, so how different contracts are performing. But that's an internal thing. With Veolia, we don't have an external body that comes out, other than where we have audits from, LRQA and places like this. We have visits from the EA, normally once a year, which is the environmental agency. So they will come in and visit us at least once a year. They come, they'll ask us some questions, we show them around site. Because at Tollgate on Beaconside, we do have a waste transfer station, so we have a permitted area. So they will come on site and they will make sure that everything's compliant. They'll ask us to send in documents and whatever else, or we'll provide them with documents when they're there. So authorities will come in and ask, but not in, those are the only sort of external ones we do at the moment.
Yeah, because if there was another company that was doing something very similar to you and you reviewed each other, you might pick things up from them and vice versa.
Yeah. I mean, we look at it at the minute as that we do that within the Municipal Collection Service. So we do compare depot to depot, so we'll go and visit Westminster or Harlow or somewhere else. So we see, and that is a lot about sharing the good practice, because it is, we are nationwide. So it is, you can work quite siloed, but to avoid that, we actually go out, so we make sure that we have to do so many visits a year. And we're always sort of interacting with the other depots, so we'll send supervisors over, we'll send managers over, we'll do all sorts. Sometimes crews go over, but normally when they need some help or whatever. But we work quite closely with the local depots, so other ones to us are Shropshire, Telford, places like that. And then we go around the country looking at different collection depots and how they're working and what's happening. So we try and always share the best practice between the depots.
Thank you for that. Do you have a good relationship with the environmental agency?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm pleased to hear that.
Yes, we don't see them. We get their compulsory visits.
Yeah.
And that's it, because they know that it's well operated. So.
Yeah. And can you just bring the committee up to date? What are you doing with? I know it's moving forward now, and we will be having a task and finish on food waste and that. I noticed you've got some of your vehicles that you've had altered to be able to accommodate that. Is that right?
No, we've applied for an operations licence, an increase on our margin for the operations licence. That is so that we can keep more vehicles on site if needed. So we've increased from 30 to 35 vehicles. Currently at the moment, we're working with the client, with the council very closely to to look at what we're going to do going forward when it's brought in time. So there are plans being discussed and we've got things in progress, but nothing's
Okay. Right, Councillor Phillips, yeah, and then Cooper. Yeah.
The assisted collections that have been missed, are you noticed that there's been an increase or a decrease in the people that have applied for this?
I think the main reason for the increase in those is what we implemented last year was when someone has a new subscription on the Garden Waste Service, they were added in as an assisted collection. So that, because that shows up differently on the Echo device, so they have to positively confirm that they've done it. So if it's a normal street with no assists on, they can confirm the whole street off in one go if they've done it all. With an assisted collection, it stands separate for the rest of the street, and they have to say they've done it or not done it, and that gives it an actual GPS tag of where they are. So as we had new collections coming on over the year, they had an assisted tag put on them. So when some of those have been missed on their first collection, that's probably added to the increase in the assisted collection. So although they're not actually assisted collections, they're reported as an assisted collection.
And are you finding it's quite a high take up of people that want the assisted collections compared to perhaps last year, or we've seen reductions?
I'd say we've seen a reduction because there's been quite a cleansing on some of those properties that are very historical. So they have been on there for a long time, even where they have been. They'll reply to say yes, they want to continue with it, but then actually their bin is presented every time.
Yeah.
You normally only find that is the case when it's reported as when we miss that bin, and then they report and it flags up as an assisted collection. But the crew will say, well, we've never actually emptied that as an assisted collection.
Yeah, it's not been taken back.
Yeah,
yeah, but
so
it was put out by somebody.
Yeah, and that can be one of the issues with assisted collections is if the carers bring the bin out, because when the crews get there, if they do it every time. The crews then used to go, well, it's an assisted collection, so it's the, you know, it is an assisted collection, but the bin's at the bottom of the street, at the bottom of the drive. So then they're like, well, are we taking it back or we're not taking it back? And if they don't take it back, then the resident will quite feasibly ring up and say, my bin's not been returned. But then, so it creates a bit of confusion. But the advice we try and give is if you are an assisted collection, leave it as an assisted collection. Don't keep bringing it down because it can get confusing. Sometimes the carers on their way out will bring the bin up, trying to be helpful, and it confuses the issue sometimes. Yeah.
Thank you. Really. Thank you very much. Councillor Cooper.
Yeah, just one or two points. I mean, on the assisted collection thing, I can imagine confusion because I know where I live, neighbours will tend to take each other's bins out and things like that, particularly if we know somebody's not too well or whatever, you know, or within the problem. So it just adds to the confusion of it. There was a period where brown bins, when we first started the charges and the stickers were on the side of them, I had quite a few complaints from people that people who hadn't got the stickers, who they knew, they said, hadn't paid their subs, but were still getting their bins collected. And I assume that was just, you know, ripples when the system was set up, but it's calmed down.
A lot of those can be that people assume that people haven't subscribed. But what the crews have is they have the definitive list of all the properties that do have a permit. So that is our first port of call. Although we've got the permit, so we see a permit on, they'll empty the bin. But if there's a bin that's presented without a permit on, they then check against the records that they've got in the cab that says they have or haven't paid. So at that point, they can say, well, they have paid, but there's no permit on it. So obviously they'll still empty it. But it might be that then they'll report that to say that resident hasn't put their permit on. So when they do come through to us as part of the reporting process where someone is saying, we know that someone hasn't subscribed, but they're still putting their bin out and it's being emptied, then those are fully checked out and they check and cross-referenced against the payments that are made and different things. So,
I think I need to share the fact that, you know, when I've been down various streets in my ward, talking to residents about any issues they've got, things like that, there's never ever an issue with bin collection.
No.
It's just the opposite. It's so positive, particularly amongst the elderly. Your guys are seen as heroes, literally. They think the world of them. Some of them know them by name. You know.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about community interaction, it's out there and it's working and it's really heartwarming.
Thank you for that. Very much appreciate it. Good to hear. It is something that, funnily enough, was discussing this morning, and we go to every property in the borough. whether it's in the towns, whether it's in villages, or whether it's very, very rural. And sometimes we are the only people that the residents will actually see. And they expect us there at a certain time. They'll make them cups of tea. They'll, you know, the drivers and loaders will stop and have a cup of tea. They'll ask them how their hospital appointments were. They'll, you know, they know everything's going on in their life. They know if they're not there because, you know, if the curtains are still closed or if the bin's not out, then they'll start thinking, well, why has that happened? And they might knock the door. Or we have several interactions in the last few, probably in the last 12 months, where drivers and loaders have knocked on the door and the residents have been sitting there and they can't work out how to put the heating on, they can't set the timers on the heating, and the crews have gone in and done that and set the timers for them. We've had them where they've reported floods on houses and all sorts. So they really are the eyes and ears of the council, to be fair, when they're out collecting.
Thank you very much.
The last thing I was going to say, you've got some lovely headline figures in these slides, which are obviously put in here in detail. Is it possible to get a copy of the slides?
Thank you very much. I'll come back to I've not forgotten you, don't worry. But coming back to what you've just been talking about, I found that very interesting, because one of the things we're looking at is caring for the elderly and what have you. So, you know, say the bin man goes and he knocks on the door because he thinks that, where does that information go then? Do you then report it back to any of the agencies, or do you come back to the council?
That'll come back to us. We'll report that to the council via Becky Martin, and then Becky Martin will distribute it to wherever it needs to go. So it can be vulnerable adults, children, elderly, and I'd say there's been a few over the years. And we then do get feedback of, yes, something's been sorted, or yeah, it's not a problem, or whatever. But 9 times out of 10, there is something that's been identified, and it can make a difference.
That is really, really interesting, because we talk to the fire people, we talk to the police about the caring and hoarding if we feel people's not looking after themselves or what. So it's really good that you're doing that, and thank you, Becky. You know, it's as long as we signpost it, all that information to the appropriate and make sure that, you know, we are looking after the elderly out there. Well, it's not only the elderly, it's disabled people and that, you know, if they've got a problem. So thank you very much for that.
They possibly are the only people that they see. And they take the time. We encourage them to take the time. Their rounds are modelled so that they don't have to rush. They can stop and have that conversation. If they see someone who's injured or fallen, they'll pick them up and take them back.
Thank you. So, Becky, can I say to you then, if you get anything like that, you know, that you can bring it to the councillors and that, you know, so if we've got somebody in our area that we feel that we can, you know, signpost and go and see them or whatever, you know, it's just looking after one another, isn't it? Sorry, Councillor Ross.
Thank you so far for the information. I think it's very informative, and obviously the work you do with the local community is greatly appreciated. I did have a few questions about, I'm not sure if you've seen the recent BBC report saying that incinerators are now worse environmentally than coal power generators, obviously because they've all been shut down. So I've done a bit of research, and from the Environment Agency, they did a annual monitoring report, which was made on the 26th of January 2023. So granted, it's a year out of date, but the figures won't change massively. So it says that the four ashes sites generate 390 tonnes of CO2 per year. It says that per tonne of waste burned, you actually generate 1.15 tonnes of CO2. And comparing it for megawatts of energy power. So for the energy you're producing, the CO2 per megawatt per hour is 1.96 compared to coal, which is only 1.02. So you're almost generating twice as much carbon dioxide from burning these plastics than you would be from a traditional coal-fired plant. So I'm wondering, what's the kind of your long-term strategy when we're talking like nationally on reducing carbon emissions?
Josh, do you want to come and sit around? Sorry. Oh, sorry, I'll sit on this. No, you pick it up on me.
We're the Waste Collection Authority, so we are not the Waste Disposal Authority. That's the county council's role. So the county give us their powers of direction. They tell us where we're going to go. back in 2013 was when the incinerator was opened, and all of the councils across Staffordshire went into the either four action incinerator or the one at Ham Church up at Stoke. So they made that decision that we were going there. At the time it was state of the art, and it is still pretty good. It is run by Veolia, you're quite right, but a different arm of Veolia from where Graham sits. So, but we're directed there by the county. The county made the decision to move away from landfill because of the greenhouse gases that landfill produced, and the landfill was really bad. Craig will come on to it a little bit later when he does his bit of a presentation about the emissions trading scheme that's been brought in by the central government to reduce emissions from incinerators. But what you'll find now going forward is a lot of the older incinerators, such as Amateur, will be decommissioned and they'll come out. So eventually the one at Four Ashes will get to a stage where that will be decommissioned as well. So I get what you're saying about, yes, it does create the headlines that came out, I think, yesterday morning or the morning before was around, you know, burning waste is now our biggest form of, it's the dirtiest form of generation of electricity. Well, that is a factor because actually two, 3 weeks ago, we shut down the last coal-fired power station, which was in Nottingham. So after that, it's all gas. So it's going to be burning waste, it's then going to be gas, then your nuclear, then your wind generation. So that's the real fact. Well, I get what you're saying, yes it is, but we're gradually progressing through that hierarchy.
I do take that on board, but I'm just asking about like, what is the strategic long-term approach from Veolia? What is the actual, have you got a plan in terms of what is going to be happening in a number of years? I'm not asking for like a definitive plan, I'm just asking what you see as your future of operations, essentially.
That's not something I'm aware of. Like Josh says, I deal with collections only, so that will be left with the people in treatment that have their plan going forward. So.
Okay.
As far as I'm aware, the government haven't really got a plan. Incineration is the next best thing. I think the idea overall is to reduce the amount of waste that we're getting into that general waste stream. So it's reduce, reuse, recycle, recover. So recovery, which is what we do with incineration, is the lowest form of dealing with our waste. So ideally you want to reduce it in the first instance, so waste reduction schemes. You want to reuse if you possibly can, so furniture reuse at our HWRCs, our tips, etc. Then recycle. We tend to concentrate a lot around the recycling bits, but we forget that there's two elements above that, which is you reduce and use. So the county, again, Craig will probably touch on it in a short while. We're working with the county, so all the districts and boroughs are working with the county council at the moment on the waste strategy. And that will major on waste reduction because it's the one thing we've got to do. We've got to get the waste reduced down, get our recycling rates up. Mm.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much for that. That's really... yes, Lee, do you want to come to the table?
It's only a quick point just to make, take on board Councillor Rose's comments. It's worth just remembering where we have come from. 20 years ago, 95% of waste went to landfill across the country, and it's now 1.6%. And things move on, things change. You know, at the time, like Josh said, 10 years ago, the incinerator was state of the art. But we were at a conference last week, and that statistic was given to us, and it was quite, we're always striving for better, and we're striving for more, but it's quite comforting to hear that landfill has reduced so much over the last 20 years, and now it's all about what will happen next. So that's what it was, Chair.
Well, thank you very, very much for that. Any more questions from the committee? Well, can I just say a very, very big thank you, and I'll just reiterate what some of the others have said. You know, we don't get complaints about collections. It's well, not we get complaints about everything else, but this is one area where we don't. So a thank you, and thank you again for all the good work that you do in the community with Hearts and Hands and Catherine House and the churches and what have you. It's absolutely phenomenal. You know, it's working together and pulling it all together, which is really good. And don't forget, committee, you know, about this fund that they've got available. We'll be there, you know, begging with our begging bow. And you know, we've got about vapes on our agenda. You know, and we're discussing that. So if there's anything we can do to eliminate... Laurie's getting on fire or whatever. So The other thing really is, again, you know, I think a couple of people went on a site visit to the waste, and it's something that we were going to pick up on, and it's not happened. So is there something that we can organise where some of the committee, if they want to go on a site visit to the waste, that you can organise? And I'm looking at Craig now. You know, between you, if you could organise something and ask the committee, and because it's something we were going to do nearly 12 months ago. We've never got around to doing it. It's just fallen off the radar. So that would be good if you could. Yes.
I was just going to say, I think me and Julian have both been on that tour, and we found it was incredibly helpful and informative, and it was a really good day out, so definitely would recommend.
I went years ago, I can't remember when, but it was a long time ago. So,
Chairman, I've also been, and actually it's nice to see Becky not wearing a high vis.
So on behalf of the committee, thank you very much, gentlemen, and you know, keep up the good work, can I say. Yeah, thank you. Right, back to the beginning. Right, so we'll now go back to item number 5A, healthcare overview. You've all got the you've read the documents and that in front of you. You'll find that you've been given today, because I said to Jackie earlier on in the week, we've not had any information about the 23rd of September from the health and care, but bless her, she's managed to get a copy for you all. So if you want a couple of minutes just to have a look at that, that would be great. Thank you. She wants a copy of that. You see, there's an awful lot of work going off in health and care at the county. And we pick up on some of that on our work programme, actually, at the end. Right. Is it your turn, Josh?
It is. Craig's just gone to grab a drink of water, but I'm just going to run you through my operational first. So
we're going on to item number 7 now, the officer's report. And if anybody's got any queries on the health and care and that, you know, if they want to ask me any questions, then I'll try and answer. But it's just a minefield at the moment at the county with health and care. Especially looking after the elderly.
What page is it?
Pardon?
What page is this?
This is a presentation.
It's just a presentation. It's not. There's no documentation.
We'll send the presentation out to you after the
So it's
after the meeting, like the OE presentation.
So thank you, Josh, and thank you, Craig, and welcome. Yeah, it's nice to meet you. You was a name at the beginning of the week, now you're an individual. So welcome.
Thank you, Chair. So the reason for putting VO on first, obviously, was to let you have time to talk to them, because this is their annual their annual review for you guys as well. And again, I'd like to offer my thanks to Veolia through the Chair for their work. They are an excellent contractor. I'd say this to Graham and to John in front of them, and Bex does an excellent job of being the sole client officer for the authority, the sole full-time client officer on the authority for waste. So a big thank you to Becky as well.
Thank you,
really,
Becky.
From me and the team, and of course to Lee as well. Who's also very good.
How can you forget Lee?
I'll never forget Lee. Probably leads me nicely onto my structure, where I haven't forgotten Lee either, to be honest with you. So,
As you're aware, I'm a relatively new head of service here at the borough. I've been in post now 18 months. I am an employee of Stafford Borough now, so I tubed over from Cannock Chase 18 months ago and became an employee of Stafford Borough as part of the shared services transformation and the senior leadership team, and as another head of service as well. We've put together between us an operation structure which has three service managers, three service main service areas, and in that I've had to swap some about. So I just want to cover off my structure first for clarity, so you know going forward who people are, and I'll introduce the other service manager to you at a later date. But I had this conversation with the chair earlier on in the week, and just say it'd be useful to know who's what. So before Craig starts on his little bit of a presentation around waste and the future of waste and the future challenges we've got going forward, I just thought I'd show you what our, my structure looks like under me. So you've got two of my three managers here. I'm not going to say the best two, but you've got a good two here. I am really lucky in the fact that I've got three really good service managers and I've got some great people working under me. So this is it if you can see it. So you'll see at the front, right at the very front, you've got Street Scene. The Street Scene service manager is the one and only Lee Boo that we love. We'll continue to offer great service to us all. So Lee will look after Street Scene for the borough, as it is now, and Street Cleansing at Cannock Chase. Slightly different at Cannock Chase, we call it Street Cleansing. Here it's Street Scene because it encompasses a lot more. But so Lee will have Street Scene and Street Cleansing. He will have parks and play area development in there. He will have grounds maintenance, which includes your highways, your parks and your play areas, or maintaining those, all the grass cutting, things like that. He will be looking at the capital works around play areas and parks, and also events and engagements, and then the major project work. So that's all under Lee. And then he'll have a little bit of an administration element. In the middle, we've got the new natural environment section, which wasn't titled by me, but that's what we're going to call it, so that's what we've called it. And that is basically your open spaces, your countryside services, and your trees. So tree management is very important to both authorities. I think we've got around about circa 70,000 trees across both authorities. Something like 1,700 TPOs, tree protection orders, and an awful lot. We're almost the size, the two combined authorities, the size of a small metropolitan council, so a city type council, a small city. For our tree management. So trees comes under its own service manager, who's Tom Walsh, who's the service manager, not here tonight. But under that, you've got countryside rangers at Cannock Chase. We've got our own rangers at Cannock Chase and our own ranger station. We've got the arboricultural work, so you've got operations, arboricultural operations and tree management, so arboricultural management as well. And then your tree officers and TPOs are a statutory function of authorities at our level, so we all have to do TPOs as part of that. Our statutory requirement for central government. Bereavement services comes under Tom now. So Tom's already had I think four or five cemeteries at Cannock, both open and closed, and he's now inherited a brand new or a crematorium and a couple of cemeteries over in Stafford Borough. On top of that, he's got the countryside and open spaces team here at the borough. And then he's got the ecologists coming to work for him as well. So ecologists here sit under planning. At Cannock they sat under our parks and open spaces, but they're all coming together under Tom. So the ecologists will come under Tom, and so too all the landscapes, and then the administration as well. So each of those three functions has our administration function. And then finally Craig, who is sat on the right hand side. Craig looks after, so he's the waste and commercial services manager. So he looks after waste, and he will be looking after waste and recycling going forward. He's got engineering services at Cannock, which is basically street furniture and street lighting, because we do some street lighting at Cannock. He looks after fleet management overall across both fleets. He also manages a vehicle workshop and an MOT station that we have at Cannock Chase that we did some years ago. He'll have pest control under him, the day-to-day operation of the markets, civil parking enforcement and car parks. So he looks after the civil parking. Civil parking for us as a borough and as a district council only relates to on our own car parks. Prior to 2015 we used to do the on-street as well, but the county took it back in-house in 2015 from the districts and boroughs, and we've been doing that since around about 2009 when I joined Waste and Engineering Services. And on top of that then he's got administration. So that is a quick rundown of my team. I'll send that through to Jackie to get out to you so you've got that. at the moment we're doing a real soft handover. So the three service managers came into the post, into their substantive roles now, with the revised job description in April this year. But we're doing a soft handover because to try and pull apart the teams, then put them back together in the right, a different jigsaw puzzle, basically, is quite difficult because between the three service managers, I think we've got around about 146, 144-ish people, individuals that we've got to manage into different roles and things like that. So it's quite a complex task. As I said to you, I'm really lucky. I've got three excellent managers that work really closely and really well together. So, you know, there's a lot of learning going on between the three of them, and I can let them get on with it, and that's what they're doing at the moment. So on that note, I will move on swiftly to doing Craig. Well, Craig will move on to doing his recycling and waste presentation, looking at what the future holds, and we'll come on to the emissions trading scheme and things like that in a little bit more detail, just to give you a flavour of what's coming, and then we'll try and talk about setting up this food waste group going forward.
Thank you that for Josh. Just to for Jackie, actually, if you can send that clip to all councillors, not just this committee, because I think everybody would appreciate that, all councillors. Yeah, thank you.
Through you, just a reminder as well to I know everybody's kind of new and things are changing, and the way the CAMEX run is different to the way that Stafford's run, but it would be great if the officers could ensure that they keep the members really up to date on the projects that they're planning in the relevant areas, because it may not be the councillors that have led those projects, but sometimes we're seeing projects cropping up all over the place that we know nothing about, and it would be great if we could be kept involved and up to date on everything that's going on. That would be super.
Thank you very much and welcome. Right, Craig,
welcome.
Yes.
I'm not sure I can do as well as what Graham did. Quite a positive presentation, but obviously I'll do my best. Got a number of slides to go through about the current service setup, a few slides about what the future holds. I'm happy to take questions throughout the presentation. I have set aside some time at the end, I'm mindful of time too. Any questions that you do have, I will do my best to answer. I'm sure Josh, Lee and Becky will also chip in too. So thank you for that. So I'll move straight on to the Waste and Recycling Service at Stafford Borough Council, how it's currently set up. We are a member of the Staffordshire Waste Partnership and have been since its beginning. We assist with and abide by the Staffordshire Waste Strategy, which in its current guise has been given since 2013, and we are currently reviewing that. It's due to be rewritten any time now, and again we will play a part in that. The current curbside waste collection service has been in place with Veolia since 2018, but has been outsourced, I believe, around 1998, late, correct? So it commenced in 2018, it's due to expire 31st of March 2028, but the contract as a whole is for 20 years, which is 10 plus 10, so during this next period we will have a negotiation with them about extending that and see what that looks like as we move forward. So the general day-to-day service how it operates, we have a twin or dual stream collection. The reason being for that is it provides a better quality and consistency of waste collections, particularly in relation to the recycling that we collect. We provide and established, it's been given, is it 5 years now, Becky? Yeah, 5 years, the chargeable garden waste service. It's a competitive fee. I know nobody really wants to be paying, but it's a competitive fee at £42 annually. We obviously compare that ongoing at all times to see what other neighbouring authorities are doing, as well as across other districts and areas around the UK. Some as high currently as around £100 per annum, so we think that's a reasonable fee for the service that's provided. It's been a successful 2024. It exceeded the sign-up targets and the financial targets. The current contract performance, as we've seen tonight through Graham and John, excellent contract performance. There's regular meetings held between the council. I had one of the questions that came earlier. I had the peer review, I think it was relating to. Whilst they might have that sort of external review body, we are reviewing them at all times. Obviously we have those regular meetings. There's day-to-day contact between their service and ours, and I'm sure we would hold them to account if there was to be any issues. So moving forward to future waste sector challenges, and there's a few. Mm-hmm. The immediate one is the food waste collections. We are in conversation at the moment with Veolia. It's likely to be introduced in 2028, even though the government are looking for a 2026 start date, but obviously there's contract implications as well that need to be resolved prior to that being launched. But again, we can I'm sure it's something that we will resolve. It's a service that will affect all domestic households in the borough, and we have received the funding, which was in the region of 1.5 million thereabouts, and that will provide additional vehicles for the service, food caddies to each property, the two food caddies to each property. It does exclude communal blocks, but they will still receive the service, but just in a different collection format. As I said, it's likely to be scheduled for 2028, the contract negotiation depending. So all affected local authorities are awaiting the government's budget later this month. The reason being for that, we need to understand whether they still have the desire to go ahead with this service. We're all aware that there's savings to be made, and the funding for this particular area of work is significant across the entire UK. And we need to be certain that it's affordable, but I'm sure we will find that out in the next few weeks. If food collections do go ahead as planned, the revenue funding will be allocated by the government for a period of 3 years before we absorb those costs into the service, into the council. One of the issues we do face is the production capacity issues, and that's both for vehicles and caddies. There's in the region of 360 something councils in the country, and around about 260 affected by this introduction. We have spoken, we have these ongoing conversations with the suppliers, and the issues that we're facing is that there's only around about 50% capacity of what is required. But we are ahead of the game. We have these conversations frequently with the suppliers, with our contractors. They plan well in advance for these types of service and contracts, and can basically juggle slots in terms of the build, particularly of the vehicles. We also have an ongoing conversation with in the Staff to Waste Partnership and with RAP, and again we've been in a conversation on today in terms of the procurement of these items. So the support out there, and I think it's important that we have that ongoing involvement with our neighbouring authorities, so we're all in touch with what's happening, particularly locally, but nationally too. The impact on the Waste and Commercial Services Department, as was said earlier, Beth is the single most important officer for the Waste and Commercial Services at Stafford, but it will affect the administrative side. Naturally, we have to do statutory recording and reporting. That will still have to be done, as will all the recording and reporting of every other aspect of waste that we do. So there will be an impact to us, so again we might have to consider how we deliver behind the scenes. The next, probably the next most impactful area will be EPR, which is Extended Producer Responsibility, and what that is the packaging arm. So currently the producers of that packaging don't pay for the impact to all of us, which is in the region of £1.2 to £1.7 billion per year. And the introduction of EPR will put the burden of that cost back onto the manufacturers of that packaging. I thought you were raising your hand.
Oh no, it's just shocking.
It's still a bit of a grey area at the moment. There's cost to be implemented in 2025, a modulated cost to be introduced in 2026. The fees and what we are likely to receive are still yet to be decided. It impacts our service in terms of the collection and transportation and separation of the material, so those costs are quite evident. We will be able to claim some of that back, as I've said, but it is unclear at the moment whether that will cover all costs at this time. We're hopeful that it will, obviously, but that's something that, like I say, will come out in the next few years. In 2027, once this has been implemented, the scheme administrator will assess all local authorities and the collection processes to ensure that any monies that we do receive is used to finance effective processing and collection of these materials. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Josh, with EPR?
No, I don't think so. I think you've got that problem. Okay, the same question.
Yeah.
What exactly is that though? I mean, is that like polystyrene or big boxes? What's the difference between a packing you get a box of cakes in, it's little, and then is it a big box you get a computer in or something?
So
like
yeah,
that?
So what it will be is that basically it's going to be a taxation, it's an extended taxation on the producers of packaging. So if they're putting packaging on the market, they will get a tax on how many tons of packaging they're producing or they're putting on the market. So the suppliers of Amazon, who do Amazon boxes, which must be doing an absolute killing, they're certainly doing our house every week, they will get a tax for how much tons of corrugated cardboard they're putting onto the market. So they will pass that on to the likes of Amazon. They will say, actually, I can't afford that, I'm not going to have that, because you're charging me more than that. So that tax, that taxation will then be used to pay for the collection and disposal, of, rather than the government having to pay for it, it will be used to pay for the collection and disposal. What they've done is, the government have been quite crafty, which is all well and good, which is what they're there for. They've said to us, right, okay, we're going to do that, but obviously there's going to be a backlash in the industry from the packaging providers, the likes of Coca-Cola and stuff, about the plastic bottles and things like that. They're not going to want to pay too much, and they're going to want to make sure you're as efficient as you possibly can be with your collections, because of course we're local authorities and we're all rubbish, aren't we, literally speaking. We can't do anything right, so we're obviously clearly not able to run an effective collection service. So in 2027, the government are going to come round and say, actually, how good are you? How do you benchmark cost-wise, performance-wise, etc.? What are you doing to improve year on year? And then they're going to penalise us. It'll be like a factor that they'll degrade. So it incentivises the one end, which is great. You know, incentivises the producers. It'll also incentivise us as local authorities to make sure that our collections and our disposal, so us and the county, the disposal authority, are collecting and disposing it of it as efficiently as we can, and we're not sticking stuff behind the sofa.
Great. Thank you. Can we leave questions till Craig's finished his presentation, please, and can we have it through the chair? Thank you.
Thank you. The next challenge we'll likely to face will be DRS, and I'm sure there's a number of us around this table that will remember a deposit return scheme in the past where you would return your pop bottles and get 10 pence for them. And it's a similar kind of thing, and the reason behind it is to increase the recycling rates of drinks containers and reduce littering. There's a few differences, nationwide, in that England and Northern Ireland, I believe, are going to be doing the same thing, and Scotland and Wales will be doing the same thing. The difference being mainly that we won't be collecting glass as part of the deposit return scheme. That will be under the EPR, as we previously mentioned. It's nearly come in once before in Scotland, the scheme has, before it was pulled at the last minute. So it was kicked down the road to 2027, so we are hopeful that it will be launched at that time, but we couldn't guarantee it at this moment. Recycling percentages, they will be impacted again by the scheme, because there will be less, because people will be retaining it themselves. The public will be taking their bottles to the vending machines, I believe, Josh, where they will receive, whether it's in the form of an actual coin or a token to spend in the shops. Local authorities will be allowed to redeem from any cans and plastic bottles that we receive through our collections, but again, it's a little bit unclear at the moment how that will happen, but we're assured that it will. But again, like I say, it's all at the moment something for the future. It'll be honest in no time, undoubtedly, but it's just something for the future. Now, this is an area where I don't have vast experience and knowledge. It's something that's come my way relatively recently. The emissions trading scheme, after we left the EU, we launched the UK arm of that, basically, back in January 2021. And it's been set up to manage emissions, not just through the waste sector, through all sectors, but it does impact on the waste sector, as it says on the slide. It's an energy intrusive sector. The idea being that it's been set up to reduce the emissions as best as possible. A cap has been set, and allowances are made up to that cap for each unit of emission. So far, the sector has been adaptable to these challenges and will continue to be. The waste sector is constantly changing. I'm relatively new to the waste sector in the last couple of years, and I've never seen change like it, frankly, certainly in comparison to my previous career. But there's constant changes all the time. Things that are promised and they're not delivered will take significant time to be delivered. But we will continue to adapt as best as we can. And stated on there, credits which can be claimed currently worth between £10 and £30, but that, again, it's a volatile market in terms of that. Again, Josh, don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah. I think we covered a lot of the energy, the emissions trading scheme when we talked about the incinerator. It doesn't impact directly on us as a waste collection authority in districts and boroughs. Where the impact comes is across the road in the county council, because they are the ones who are going to be penalised, and they will get this put against them. So it will impact. It will impact on the Staffordshire taxpayer generally. So it will impact on our residents and residents across the road, as it will on every other county and an area across the country. It's basically a replacement for the landfill tax, because landfill tax brought in revenue for landfill. Everyone's moving away from landfill now, dirty landfill, so we're now moving towards incineration. And it's another taxation, it's another incentive by the government to ensure that we are disposing of our waste as efficiently as possible, in the most efficient type of incinerators. So we're not running 30, 40 years old incinerators like we've got at Hanchurch forevermore. We're trying to build new, like the one we've got at the 2013 one, which is relatively new, and we're constantly developing those to become cleaner and cleaner going forward. And also, the main things we talked about before, top of that waste hierarchy, is reduce, reuse, recycle, recover. Recovery is at the bottom of that, because it isn't dirty. Recovery isn't great, but it is a form of doing something. But reduce the waste and make that into a circular economy, because that's all we're talking about now is this producing this circular economy, so we're not constantly taking things out of the earth and precious resources, we're actually reusing a lot more now. Thank you, Chair.
Isn't it? Wow, you blow my mind actually. with all that information. Just one quick question, going back to food waste. Now, Newcastle Upon Lyme have been doing this for a while now. Is there any lessons that we can learn from them? Talking among yourselves.
We are in constant contact. Again, they're members of the Staffordshire Waste Partnership too. Me and Becky paid them a visit only recently to see what their service was like. We went out to see what their vehicles were like, what their collectors, their loaders were doing. We're in constant communication with them. It's a good service, but that they've had a number of issues along the way that they're happy to share with us. So hopefully it will be a benefit to us to learn from their experience.
I was going to say that, if you learn the lesson from them, then it's, brilliant. Yeah, thank you for that. Right, Councillor Cooper, you've got a question.
Yeah, a couple of things. Roundbin collection is garden waste.
Yeah.
Contaminants that end up in it. Where does that actually go? I'm aware that there's, just between Burn and Derby, Biffa have got a very large composting facility, highly technical place.
Yeah,
but it's still there or not. Have we got something similar somewhere that we send it all to?
We have, but I'm going to lean on my colleague because he's got better detail on that.
Yeah, so again, it's now managed by the Waste Disposal Authority, the County Council, because that is the treatment of waste. But where that does go is to a place called Mill Farm, which is near Chepsey, and it does a very similar process to what you were just describing. So the garden waste there goes, it's turned into compost and soil improver over a number of weeks and months, and is then sold privately. So that's where it's gone there for a number of years as well.
Okay, thank you. And leading on from that, we talk about food waste, and that's a completely different kettle of fish, because you're talking about cooked food, you're talking about meat, and goodness knows what else is in there, becoming quite smelly and attractive to rats and all sorts of things very quickly. So the whole process of collecting that, I should imagine, not just sitting in a caddy, because it's the mush I'm just thinking of, sitting in a caddy in a bin outside, technically. And on the back of that, what happens to that? What do you physically do with it when you've got it?
What will happen to it, basically, you will have two containers, or most of the residents will have two containers. So you will have a smaller container to keep it inside the property, and a larger container externally. It's, trust me, it's fine. we're going to do some workshops to go through this anyway. And obviously when it's full, we will also be providing caddy liners, hopefully, as long as everybody's in agreement with that through the workshops. Once your small caddy is full, you tip that into your larger caddy, perhaps, which will go for collection. Once that's then collected, it will be transferred, weekly collection, will be transferred to a AD plant, where the process starts where that goes to create energy again, and the byproduct that comes from that, I'm reliably informed, goes to basically a slurry fit for the farms. So there's no waste. Effectively, it's all used, and the bags are stripped out as well in that process.
So, and presumably by extracting that, you might have said this, and I didn't pick up on it. By extracting that food element from general waste, is there a saving on that? Because it will reduce your general waste.
There will be, but again, we've had this conversation. It's probably going to be a longer term saving. We have to do some mid term work to ultimately create a longer term saving. Mm.
I think through you, Chair, that when you're talking about savings, are you talking about in waste tonnage, or are we talking about in cost?
They're both really, because I'm looking for the driver.
The government's driver on this one is the fact that methane that's produced in landfill from rotting food waste is something like, I think the
21 times worse.
I would say 28 or 20 odd times. I'll take the Green Party members. 21 times more damaging to the atmosphere than carbon dioxide. Mm. So that's the way they're justifying putting on all these additional vehicles to go around and collect on a weekly basis, because it is so damaging. It also takes it out of the waste stream, so we're reducing. Mm. We are reusing part of it to do something else. So with the gasification of the food, the gas that comes off it, the methane, is then used to create energy. So it's used for generation of electricity. So you have these big bubbles, like we've got it down at the plant at the Can Chase at Biffa. And then the digestate that comes off gets stored in big tanks, and the farmers come along and they pump it into the tractor, and then they go out and make a real smell all over the field to us. Mm. You know? But that's the whole
smell
process.
In the house.
So it's trying to make it as circular as we possibly can. Yeah. So that's the theory behind it. There's a debate in the industry a couple of years ago when the government announced, he said, whether we've got enough land to put all this digestate on, and that's still a bit of a live debate at the minute with the EA, etc. Because all that digestate has to be licensed to go onto the land, because last thing you want is too many nutrients in the land of certain types. So there's a whole debate around that. But generally speaking, that's the way we go.
Right, Councillor Hobbs. Oh, sorry, Lee. Do you want to come in?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I sort of felt a bit of a reaction when we talked about how that food waste might be.
I'm just thinking of a little bin on the side of my sink, and it's gone coming down. I'm thinking,
a big role for us will be about that education to our residents and to elected members as well, about understanding, you know, why we're doing this and the best ways to store that on the house and how it will be collected. With any service change, you face a lot of questions. You know, think back to when we introduced the blue bag. You know, the first reaction from a lot of people I spoke to was, what a waste of money. And so it's about then educating people as to why we're doing it. Actually, it's going to save us money. And people in time get used to the new service change and understand why we do it and the benefits to the taxpayer. And if and when food waste does come in, it will be making sure we go through that same process, make sure we explain why, we educate residents to understand these are the reasons why you do it, and then hopefully it will just become second nature over time, as it has been with the blue bag now.
It's quite interesting, actually, because you think about plastic and that, and if somebody had abused their initiative years and years and years ago, we wouldn't be in the situation we are, with all these plastic bottles being thrown around and whatever. And I understand there's an health implication with plastic in your system as well, which I don't fully understand, but it's only what I'm picking up of what I'm reading and different things, yeah. So, right, Councillor Hobbs, was he next? And then Councillor Thorney and Councillor McNaught.
I just wanted to clarify a few points because there's so much information.
I know, it's blown my mind.
It's really interesting.
It's really interesting, yeah.
Over for glass bottles.
Not, sorry. No,
I've got that wrong.
Not initially.
No.
They're for plastic bottles.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I mean, the whole point of it, I suppose, the taxation and that circular economy, is about getting the manufacturers to use less.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah,
which they should have done years ago.
The single most commonly found item, aren't they?
Can I come in there, Chair?
Yes, of course you can.
There's been, and again, one of the questions earlier was around why is it that our recycling tonnages are dropping, and there's a national push on manufacturers to reduce the amount of material they're using anyway, and it's extended produce responsibility, another push at that. If you drop a milk bottle now out of the supermarket, it will explode. Whereas a few years ago, you had half a chance of it exploding. Now they will go because they are that thin. They're getting like wafer thin. The glass industry, interestingly, and I could probably bore you to death all over this and play stuff. The glass industry pushed back really hard against extended produce responsibility, which is why the glass isn't included in the initial thing, DRS, because they're like, hang on a minute, we put enough money towards this, that, and the other. So it's been sort of excluded a little bit initially, certainly from DRS, from deposit return schemes, which in our day, well in my day, and probably a few of us, friends, the thing you used to return was your pop bottles, you know, to your off licences or to your pop man, and you get your 10 or 5 pence back. I remember 10 pence, I remember 5 pence. But that's what you get.
You're
back.
Showing your age, Josh, be careful.
Now it's more about, you know, they want the plastics back and things like that. The impact for us is that we generate, as a local authority, a revenue from our materials that we put through our plants. We get like a sorted output material cost for it that our providers give back to us. So all of the high value stuff, eventually, the glass and the plastics and things like that and the cardboard will come out of our waste streams, and we will literally be left with the rubbish. The bits that's not got very little value, that there's no point in having a deposit on, because it doesn't create any back value for the manufacturer. So we'll be left with the rubbish that we won't get lost on, but we'll still end up doing something.
Right. Now I've got Councillor, are you want to come back, Councillor Hobbs?
Because the other question was about the caddy, because I collect all my kitchen waste, you know, onion peelings, potato peelings, anything like that, already. Sorry.
It's
the
okay.
caddy
it's okay.
in the kitchen. It doesn't really smell. Yeah, it's emptied every day into our compost. Now, the other stuff, meat, rice, pasta stuff, that goes in the bin. So, do you want all of mine? Or can I continue? Or am I doing wrong collecting those things?
Well, we will let you know, like Lee said, it's the education side of it that will come out of.
Because we have great compost from that.
Yeah.
You know, with grass cuttings and old flowers and things like that.
If you can own compost, that's the best thing possible.
Yeah.
We said this with garden waste, etc. If you've got a home composting, that's what we want, because that's not moving far from you. And if you can use that compost on your own, your gardens, your neighbours' gardens, that's absolutely fine. You carry on doing that. These are people that can't or won't or are not interested in composting. The caddy will have a caddy liner, so you'll have a little bag in there that you'll fill your little bag up, and it'll only be a small bag, and you can do it, you know, after a big meal, and then take it out and put it in your little bin, so it won't be too messy. The messy part comes when the guys have to slop it out.
It's just the thought of it. Yes, Lee.
Chair, sorry, another point. But what we've heard from other local authorities as well that have already introduced food waste is how surprised residents are about how much food waste they actually have. And it actually changes the behaviour of some residents, because they actually realise they're buying way too much food in the first place. Back to reducing our waste. And actually, what a number of residents find is they realise they're buying way too much food in the first place, and it reduces that waste in that way as well. There will inevitably still be food waste. But other authorities have told us that residents have fed back that I didn't realise how much was thrown away till I put it into a separate caddy and it's
true.
Reduced.
Yeah. Last time I had a compost bin at the bottom of my garden, I ended up with a load of mice, so I was a bit upset. Anyway, coming back to reality, Councillor Thornley, you're next, then Councillor McNaughton, and then Councillor Phillips.
Right, thanks, Chair. I mean, I'm quite interested in the tax, the new tax you mentioned about on plastics, for instance. Now, I know what's going on across industry today. There's a lot of outsourcing from the big firms. That means they buy in components to be put on the products that they build. They come in with excess packaging. Although I get it myself, built-in engines, you know, solenoids, exhaust bellows, castings, I could name them all. Now, if people are going to be taxed for this, for producing too much plastic, it shouldn't be the firms that have outsourced the work, it should be the firms that they've outsourced them to that pick up the taxation on it, because they've actually wrapped them up in these plastics, haven't they? How are you going to define who the culprit is? Because they put you in this predicament.
Yeah.
And the weight's going to fall on your shoulders to differentiate and apportion blame.
Yeah.
Can you answer that?
Yes, yes, can't you? So, so that scheme itself is administered by DEFRA through central government. So DEFRA have done the work, and they're going to sit in between the local authorities, be it a collection authority or disposal authority, and the producers. And it will be the people that produce the actual packaging that will be taxed. So the producers, the box maker, the Amazon box maker, will be taxed on it. So the idea is the Amazon box maker increases the price of his box. So Amazon's saying the box maker, I don't want that many boxes tomorrow, I want less boxes because you're going to charge me a fortune for them, more than you were, you know, in the week. So it reduces the requirement for the packaging. So that money then comes into the government. The government then, or DEFRA then distributes it around. So the idea is it's to drive the market forces down in the right direction towards that circular economy.
Thank you. Councillor MacNaughton, it's your
turn. I was just going to agree with Councillor Hobbs that I put all my food waste in the caddy for years, chuck it in the composter in the garden. Just disappears, really. The worms eat it all.
Okay, Councillor Phillips.
My sister lives near Cirencester. They've been doing the whole food caddy for years now. Doesn't smell. It really doesn't smell, either inside or outside. They don't use plastic bags or little bags, and I really, really, really hope that we don't as well, because that's just creating another problem. I know they're decompostable, you're decomposed, but it takes such a long time for that to happen that in reality they're not really very good. So if maybe education would be a better way of looking at it than perhaps teaching people to put them in little bags and throw them out. They're only a problem when you're not used to it. And you're right, it has reduced the amount of food wastage. It really shines a light on how much people are throwing away. And all letting rot in the bottom of the fridge, and it's made a massive difference down there. So I think we're long overdue, and I'm quite excited about the scheme coming here. So good work.
Thank you. Councillor Cooper.
Yeah, I visited the plant, and I was under the impression that glass was moved away to somewhere, remelted and recast into new bottles. Not the case. It's broken down into coloured and probably used as filling potholes and things like that. So it's not going back into the system as reused glass. It's reused, it's repurposed, shall we say, rather than reused.
Sure, through you. The issue with glass is that quite often it gets fragmented into two smaller pieces to remelt, and it gets mixed, so you get different colours, and you can't then reuse it in a similar thing, where you can with plastic bottles, for example, the plastic milk bottles, a lot of those get basically recycled into other plastic bottles, or plastics will get recycled into fleece jackets and things like that, whereas glass is it gets broken down into such constituents and mixed that they can't, at the moment the technology isn't there to separate it back out.
Thank you very much. And do you want to come back?
Yeah, I was just going to say, of course, the answer to that is to just use a milkman.
Yes, Councillor.
You know, because over the past year,
here, I've been collecting tin and giving it to an organisation that takes it up to the a metal place that, God, I don't know where it is, by the common, you know, there's an old place there, and you just take it and they weigh it, and then money goes into an account and it's being used by this group of people that they do litter picking, of course, and obviously pick tins up there. So I'm wondering what do we, is tin, because of doing that, I can't remember what I did with my tin before, did that go into just the ordinary bin?
As in tins, cans,
tins,
tins of soup and tins like that, yeah.
Into your ordinary bin, into your recycling bin, not your ordinary bin.
That's quite good to recycle as well, isn't it, really? Yeah. Would you not start collecting that separately, or money for it?
It's already, isn't it, folks? It's
picked out.
Yeah. It gets sorted at the
I think we've had a really, really good, interesting conversation and presentation, and I think it's all made us think a little bit, hasn't it? And it's surprising. It's really, really interesting. Thank you for that. It's what can I say? Thank you, guys, and thank you, Becky, and that for what you do on the waste and everything, and all the other good work that Street Scene do and what have you. So thank you very, very much, and it's nice to meet you, Craig.
You too.
All the other faces I do know, but I didn't know yours, so it's nice to... thank you very, very much. Right, now, the next thing is our work programme. Can I just say to you, looking at it, we've got quite a bit. I mean, we've got to look at food waste. We've got to have probably, would you not agree? I mean, it's a committee's decision that we have a task and freeze probably February, March time. Would you think that's a good idea, Josh?
Yeah, sure.
To start looking at that. So probably, what, 4 people on it? Would you think that would be suffice?
I'm open to
suggestions.
That would be a good start.
Good start, right, okay. So we'll look at that for probably February, March time next year. And we can discuss that probably at the next. What I want to say to you is we've got a meeting on the 21st of November, and then we haven't got another meeting till March. Now, looking at the things that we've got to look at, which are the food waste, we've got some work on defibrillators, but this is coming back from what County was talking about. Looking at the LD and independent living and warmer homes, which is probably where Anna comes in. we've got businesses. Do you remember a few meetings ago, Gabriella Woodhouse was here and she was talking about food hygiene and business premises, and about some of the business premises was upset because they got low grading. But because they didn't understand the system that the borough works, and she was going to do a survey actually out to some of the businesses. Do you remember that? Well, I can. And I'm just wondering whether that's been done, but she's not here to answer that. So it's something we can probably discuss when she's back, probably off holiday. We've also got to look at children leaving care in housing. And again, that's been brought up again this afternoon at the Children in Care across at County, because we're the housing providers for, and that's probably something, Anna, we need to talk about. So that's another thing we need to do. And again, we've got a visit to do to the waste places and that. And the other thing is about these vapes and that, which seems to be a growing problem, doesn't still. You know, we've looked at it. We have got Jazz Parsons coming to one of the meetings. I think, when is it? It's not till March, isn't it? So it's, yeah, but Giles is coming to that, probably something we pick up then, but it seems to be growing. And have you noticed how the trading standards have picked loads of places up now with vapes in the, I don't know, they're not real or they're not... And also, I picked up also about them getting rid of some drinks that they're selling in some of the shops that's got illegal substances that we shouldn't be selling in this country. I don't know whether you've got any knowledge on that. I picked that up in the papers, actually, the local newspapers. So we've got a lot on our agenda, you know, and I'm just thinking, what do you think? That, I mean, 4-month gap is a long time, for... And Anna, do you want to come in about, you know, your our bit about children and leaving care and supported living and that sort of thing. And then we'll talk a bit further when let Anna.
No, thank you. Just to pick up on a couple of things that you've raised there. You mentioned FAPES. The Health and Equalities Project, that does pick up on a project around vaping. So it could be that we cover that in as part of that agenda item.
Right.
I think just looking at the next meeting, there is a lot on that agenda. We've got Freedom Leisure coming to present the report. And we also have Housing Plus coming for their annual presentation as well.
Yeah.
This is November.
This is November.
And
yeah.
We've got the quarter two performance report. So I think that in itself will most definitely fill the time. So
well, you've only got 6 minutes tonight. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The question or suggestion maybe is we could maybe, if you do want to have that additional meeting, move the Health and Equality Projects to maybe a January meeting, which would include the BAPES as well.
That'd be good.
I think you've mentioned a couple of housing things there. What we have currently under review is the homelessness strategy for the council, and we're aiming to get that to Cabinet in March at the moment. It could be that we present our thinking on that at a maybe January meeting if you wanted to have an additional one to set out what the key issues are at the moment. I know homelessness is an issue that comes up quite regularly at this meeting. And to set out our thinking on strategic direction for the homelessness strategy going forwards. I think that would also include what you mentioned about housing and care leavers and potentially picking up on the independent living side of things as well. If you
That makes a lot of sense what you're saying, Anna, actually.
Just picking up the final thing you raised about different things in vapes and illegal substances.
Mm.
There is an element we can pick on health and equalities there, but a lot of that is trading standards, which is a county responsibility.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think we've got to try and differentiate between what we're responsible for.
Yeah. Any comments from anybody? January meeting, do you think that would survive? Do you all agree that we should have a meeting in January?
It's a must.
Because it's too big. We've got so much to do, and we don't sit around a table and sit here and just talk about things. We want movement, we want to get something done and some achieve things out of this committee, not just not talking shop. Yeah. So, can we look at some dates then, Jackie, for some January meeting, please? Right. I don't think there. I think that's about it. Unless anybody's got any other comments or anything. Yes, Mr. Councillor McNaughton.
Do you know whether you're
free
on your work program or not? If it applies, can I ask about balloon releases?
I'm sorry. It's all right. I can't hear you very well because that noise from that.
Whether you need to
look
at. It's the
rain. Oh, is it rain? I thought it was the century.
Yeah,
oh my god. Sorry. Yeah, so
it's the right place to bring it up or put on your future work programme that release of balloons.
Good idea.
Example of a memorial service, letting up a load of balloons on the family road, which is actually at the Borough Council.
Is it not illegal to do that on council land?
Yes, it is. Put in 2019, 2018, something like that, some time ago, there was a legislation that was put in.
There isn't a way of any enforcement or any consequences for doing it. And
thank you for raising that,
It went ahead, actually. Like, I know people are complaining about it and got livestock and things like that.
Thank you for that. I think Josh has got some answers for us.
Can we just cover that off quickly?
Yes.
A big thing. There is a motion, or there was a motion passed some years ago at the Borough, as of other authorities, including Canning. The difficulty being that the motion didn't come with any powers, so we haven't got the power to stop it.
So you can ban it, but you can't.
You
do
can ban it, but
it.
You can't stop it. Now the organisers could move onto the highway and release the balloon from there. The offence of littering isn't actually the release of a balloon, it's where the balloon falls.
Yeah.
So that litter could fall outside of the borough, could fall outside of the county. So it's not actually they haven't committed, there's no offence committed by the release of the balloon. It's the offences when the balloon settles, if you understand. So we haven't got, what we try to do, people approach us and said, can we do a balloon release? We were saying no, unfortunately we don't allow it. There are other forms of memorial that you can take, or you could do. You could plant a tree, or you could do something. You could do a tethered balloon release, for example, where people tie bits of string to them and put a tent peg in and release a balloon and then leave them for a little while. So that's the sort of thing they can do. We didn't have any powers to stop that. The other thing is as well, we didn't actually have a direct contact with the organiser. We only had third party information that was sending pieces of Facebook. We can't, as an authority, contact them through our Facebook account directly, contact anybody directly, because Facebook doesn't allow us to, unless they've already contacted us. So unless we've already got, they've opened a line of communication, because you just can't physically can't do it. So we couldn't contact them, privately message them like you privately message people between them. So Anna's team tried to find out through if there was a family liaison officer that had been appointed by the police to the family, so we could try and get contact with them that way, but there wasn't. Unfortunately, we tried it all week trying to get hold of this particular family, and it culminated on Friday afternoon at about half an hour, and we just couldn't get hold of anybody. So we couldn't. We didn't want to put something on the public page to say we don't allow this to happen, because we didn't think that was appropriate for the family. But going forward, learning point for us in the street team and then Leeds team is we think we perhaps need to publicise a little bit better on our open spaces, so put some signs of saying we don't allow the releases, we don't allow lantern releases, and probably do something in a couple of months' time after Christmas, put something out on our Facebook page, just to remind people that we don't allow them, and that if they're doing anything like that, big organised events need to come through the authority then to ask our permission. And also, there's a thing about responsible bodies group, or the safety advisory board of the county. They need to go through those with large groups of people who need to be properly marshalled.
Thank you for that. It's such a shame, isn't it, that we can't, you know.
Yeah.
It is, because you're quite, Councillor McNaughton, it's really not good. Mm. Yes, Councillor Ross.
Thank you, Chair. So is there something we could do to actually give you some enforcement powers behind that?
Chair, you can create a bylaw if you really wanted to, and that is the only way that I'm aware of that we can enforce those type of policies.
How do we go about that?
I've been in local authorities 38 years, and I've never known a bylaw being created for anything. Oh, well, maybe speaking on streets in Canada, they put one in a few years ago, wasn't particularly successful, because you've got to catch them in the act of spitting, but that's probably the only one. So you could put a bylaw. But for the amount we've had, this again is the first one for me in a long time. We've probably had the banning at Canuck for about 5 years now. It's never been an issue. This is the only issue I've ever known with the balloon release. More often than not, people approach and say, can we do a balloon release? And say, unfortunately not. We don't let them around cemeteries and things like that.
I'd certainly support any kind of initiatives you have on, you know, signage and kind of promotion and education behind it. I'd say, I know you said like maybe do one in January, but I think maybe before Christmas, New Year's, because obviously people tend to do it at New Year's, so maybe just on the education thing, if you do kind of, you know, start up the education before New Year's, just so people have it in their minds for that festive period.
Thank you. I'll come to you three in a minute. Just let me make a comment, actually. There's something we can do, and it's picking up Councillor Barron's point about car parking and people parking. I'm just wondering whether when we put our letters out about brown bins, you know, that we could probably put something in there, you know, please park your car, you know, because you might not get your bin emptied, or I don't know. But something we could put together to get the, you know, it's out to the public. Don't park your car so you'll not get your bin emptied or something. You know, it's just something to help Viola.
Chair, a certain three members of my team that happen to be sat behind me tomorrow are at a comms meeting about garden waste, so I'm sure that might get raised.
Oh, thank you very much. Right, Councillor Phillips, yeah?
I absolutely support what my fellow councillor has said. I think if there's anything that we can do to raise awareness, obviously
by law,
sky lanterns as well as balloons. I think it's about educating people. It's one of those things where everybody does that and then we learn why we shouldn't. And then it takes a long time to filter down to people, and it's done with all the best of intent and, you know, for all these emotional reasons. But the reality is that the impact on the environment is horrific. and very long lasting. And yeah. Is there a bylaw that we can? Is that something we can do?
Is that
something we can talk to you about?
Yeah.
Are you the man with the hat?
You can certainly talk to legal about creating the bylaw. I think probably Ian's, sorry, through you, Chair, Ian's response would probably be you're taking a bit of a sledgehammer to crack a nut. You know, probably
sometimes it
needs.
Yeah.
There
is an enforcement issue around, which would be Gabrielle's team, of course. And again, Sol was involved in that whole process as well. So we were trying to sort of do what we could as sensitively as possible to try and reduce that from happening.
So through you, Chair, is that something that we could do as a committee? Could we write to Ian,
Jackie,
as a committee and ask what we can do? Is that something that we can?
I mean, Councillor Cooper is shaking his head, and I don't know why, but yes, I take on board. It's something we can ask Ian about and take it through the legal system. I'm going to bring Councillor Nixon in because she's not said a word tonight. So I'm going to, before I bring you in, Councillor Cooper, yeah. There's a lot of it going on.
So there's a combination of emotions surrounding that. So we need to do it delicately.
I think at that time there were a number of different groups of people on social media that were arranging these things. I didn't even know about the one in the park. I at the time knew about other events that were going on.
Yeah.
I think it's in general it needs to be done.
Moving on, I think it's something we will look at and talk to Ian about. So yeah, okay, Councillor Cooper.
I side with what Ian will probably say, which is a sledgehammer to crack a nut. I think we can have bylaws till they're coming out of our ears, and it won't do anything because the enforcement's very limited. Cycling through the middle of the market square. It's not a course. I get mown down no end of times nearly with bikes, but nobody's enforcing it. A police car went past somebody on a bike, and it's ignored. So. Releasing balloons, if nobody's going to enforce it, nobody's going to be able to track where that particular balloon came from or anything like that, it just becomes a nonsense.
Oh.
What does work is education. And people realising why it's not on to do this sort of thing and what the impact is.
Yeah,
and it's technical literally. And it's a danger to the countryside. I'll hold my hand up and say, about 15 years ago, something like that, my mum passed away. And as a family, we sat around and had one of these Chinese lanterns, and we all wrote a little message on it and sent it off in the sky. A week later, I was talking to a farmer friend who was despairing about the cattle that he got sick, who'd been chewing his balloons, and I thought, oh no.
Yeah.
Now that was education. I had several of those in, because you buy them in a packet in the garage, the lot went in the bin because I wasn't going to use them. Yeah. I was educated on it. And that is a better way of doing it than in trying to do a bylaw, which isn't going to be.
I did suggest
support.
Education as well.
I think it's something we could. Yes, Josh. Come back to you. Yes.
Sorry, Chair. As a final point on this, because I'm obviously very conscious of the time.
Yes.
There is another one, and I hadn't thought about this when we were talking because I forgot I had the conversation with Sol. Sol was talking about potentially adding it into the PSPO orders going forward. So if we've got it in there and covered, it becomes part of the public price protection order, so we can outlaw it that way. So then it becomes a fixed penalty notice, so we can.
Good idea.
So we don't necessarily need a bylaw, so we're not taking the sledgehammer. But in fairness, I forgot I'd had that conversation. I've been to bed since then. I am sorry.
Thank you very, very, very much.
Councillor
Barron, do you want to come in? And that's in our food chain, isn't it? So, yes, it is a very difficult situation.
And, like the group said, it needs monitoring.
Is there anything that you want to bring in, Anna? You know, anything more you want to say? You sat here quite quietly, bless you.
The only thing I was thinking about when Joss mentioned the PSPO, because I have just asked community safety team about that, what we need to be able to bring that in is the evidence that it has become a problem. Obviously, the impact is significant, but if there's not the instances, that could be very, very difficult to then prove, and we don't actually want the instances to then make the case, so it could be a bit of a circular argument, but sent an email to the community safety team to see what their thoughts are.
Thank you very, very much for that. I think we've covered just about everything. Just one comment. You know, on that, where we've got a list of the officers and who are the respond, is there some phone numbers on that?
It can be.
Can you put the phone numbers on so we know where we can get all the, you know, mobile numbers and that, so we can,
it will really kick in after Christmas, Chair.
That's
when the soft splits.
Yeah,
in.
And it goes out to everybody, Jackie, all the councillors and that. Yes, quickly.
I just wanted to ask Anna, obviously we just heard all the rain coming down. We did notice when we came back for our planning meeting yesterday that there were some homeless people that camped outside our offices. We just wondered whether the team had been out and visited or were aware of the fact that they were.
There's two people who are out there quite a bit at the moment. We do know them. We're offering advice and support.
Right, I think, yes, Council.
I presume this is the County Council. Mental health, learning disabilities and autism. Mm-hmm. Do we cover that or is it just the County Council?
I'm sorry, please.
Can we complain about that? Because autism, there's a 2-year wait for children and that's totally unacceptable.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it is...
Other things as well.
This is something that's high on the agenda, and I know it's high on the agenda. I mean, the partner governor from the county to the Midland Partnership Foundation Trust. So that is one thing that I do know Neil Carr is really concerned about, autism, really, you know. And I've actually brought it up again this afternoon at the meeting over there about mental health with the Midland Partnership Foundation Trust, with the children and that, you know. So numbers, everything's been done that can be done.
But the help isn't there, is it? 2 years is an awful lot.
I fully understand where you're coming from, yes. And we're doing all we can to...
Because this particular field seems to be being neglected at the moment.
It's something that we're quite well aware of, and we're working very hard to try and eliminate the problems that we've got with the staff that we've got. It is very, very difficult. Yes, I understand where you're coming from, but we're doing all we can to bring the numbers down.
It was raised in the meeting this morning, the County Council Cabinet meeting this morning, which is online, so they did talk about everything that you talked about.
Yes, I will. As you know, I'm a mental health champion for Staffordshire, so I am very, I mean, I brought it up about mental health. Really concerned about it. Yeah, sorry. But it's a county, not a,
for
information. Well, we can do that. There's no reason why not.
It would have to be opened up to the whole.
Pardon?
It would have to be opened up to all councillors.
It wouldn't just be.
It's not our jurisdiction, so.
It just wouldn't be this committee to be. Okay, anybody got anything else to say? Yeah, all right, well, I can thank you very much. We've had a very good meeting. We've learnt a lot, I've got to say. Safe journey home and watch the rain and don't get caught in any floods and don't drive through any big ponds.